I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we are back for episode 145 of Digital Divination. Only five more till we hit 150.
Yeah, and only that's
55 more. Until, yeah, anyway.
Good. You got the math right because you messed up the math last time, Ron.
Did I? Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
You were like 10 under, he said. And
I
only
could turn in my math degree. Four. Wow.
Yes, yes, yes. So good. Anyway. We're getting there. We're getting there. All right. I'm really excited because in the mail, I got my copy of Guilt of the Grave World written by my friend Michael Bramnick. And I thought we would talk about this today.
Let's do.
Did you all get copies too? I don't know if they allow you to.
No, I didn't get it. I have my PDF.
I have my copy.
I didn't ask for one. I forgot to ask for one. I got to get them to send me one.
Oh, so. They don't automatically send you copies. You have to ask for them all?
Sometimes they do. I automatically get some stuff, and sometimes I don't get stuff.
So I know why. I know why, now that I'm there. It's because at some point your manager signed you up to automatically get certain product lines, but everything else you have to opt into.
Yes, yes. Indeed, but I thought I asked them to change that at some point, but I guess it didn't propagate.
Well,
I have not only did I get this, I got my... Array. I was gone from Paizo for 3 years, and in the meantime, I did not have a subscription. I was getting a copy of everything for free, so I'd missed a lot of, like, Howl of the Wild and, you know, Player Core 2, Wrathia. I'd seen Battlecry. Like, I'd flipped through Battlecry, but I didn't own a copy of my own. Anyway, so I requested all the interim things, and now they're all here on my shelf that I have. Yeah, look at that. So,
lovely. Yes.
It's sorry. Nice.
Slowly filling up. Yeah, my shelf is getting too full of the Pathfinder second edition non-remastered stuff. Eventually, I'm going to have to start moving that down.
I recommend having the remaster. I'll see if I can point at it with my thumb. The pre-remaster down here and the remaster up top. So
okay.
Yeah, I could do that. And then I have all the APs over there, too. So too much stuff. Anyway. So, well, a couple of us have hard copy. One of us has a digital copy. So I thought we could talk about some of the things that we like about this new adventure path. So first of all, let me describe it a little bit. They call it an adventure path. It is 128 pages total. Mm-hmm. It is written by one author, and it goes to levels 1 to 5. So this is a different type of model. Or adventure paths. It's longer than a standalone adventure, shorter than some of the other book adventure paths. Like they did Mechageddon was like, that was a three author one. It was quite a bit bigger. So I think this was, well, in fact, they kind of say that in here to some part that this was coming out about the same time as the release of the Starfinder second edition. So they mentioned that certain critters in here might be slightly different than what comes out in Alien Core. If that's the case, go with the ones in Alien Core rather than here. And I'm sure Errata comes down the road for digital copies.
It's a real Herculean undertaking to put out all of that stuff at once. You know what I mean? Or even closer, but within months. I know Player Core and GM Core came out a month or two apart, but still putting all that together and just having the adventure while the system is still kind of being kind of baked in the oven.
Right.
It's tough. I could see why they didn't necessarily want to go with the full 1 to 10 or 1 to 11 or whatever. Just because putting all that effort in and coordinating, that would have to be multiple authors because making one person write 10 chapters of an adventure is Only James Jacobs has the stamina to do that.
Excuse me.
Ron, fair enough. You did do it. You did do it. But just say yes. Yes, that's fair. I apologize. And so, yeah, so I could see why they just sort of like, oh, do something a little shorter, give it to one author so that it's that author can have it all kind of like in.
Oh, no, I thought I'd turn that off.
Well, and that one author, Michael Bremnick, you know, props to him for pulling this together. Normally, mm-hmm. at the launch of a new edition, everything's done in-house because it's the importance of having people talk to each other so closely as things are changing. And Michael Bremnick being a freelance author, that makes the job kind of doubly difficult for him. So the fact that he was able to pull the whole thing together while the rules are sort of still gelling, that's a tough place to be. So props to him for getting through it.
But then you get to be have like your name on the first adventure path.
Yeah.
Right.
So yeah.
There's some prestige there for sure.
I was, when I heard early on that he had done this, I was a little jealous. I have to admit, it's like that.
Well, and there's a little bit
cool thing.
I think that, you know, some people could say, well, it hardly feels like an adventure path. It's only 128 pages and it's only levels 1 through 5. But let me say, I think that there's, generally speaking, Paizo hasn't really solidified. They've got a sense of what are their adventure lengths, right? There's one shots, which are the organized play scenarios or literal like one shots or evening things. And then there's sort of the adventures that are the middle, and then there's a whole campaign, but a whole campaign might be 5 levels, 10 levels, 20 levels. It's just letting you know that this is a commitment for you and your group more than especially some of the shorter adventures might be. Mm-hmm. And so this is, it's telling you by saying adventure path on it, that this is one of those commitments. So that's fair, I think, to say on the cover.
And one of the neat things about having Mike do this, he was a 5Nova Society GM, been doing Starfinder for a very long time. A lot of callbacks to Starfinder Society in here, which I thought was kind of cool. So so let's each talk about what are some of the things that we really liked about this, and say cover our top three, and if we have time, maybe honorable mention, something like that. I'll go ahead and start this time because I think Jason started last time. So
sounds good.
Okay,
I'll start, and then we'll put Ron second, and we'll have Jason do cleanup on that.
Okay, goodbye. I'll call him right back.
Excellent. We'll get some tea or something. Yeah. So one of the things I really liked about this is like kind of the first long form adventure that somebody coming to Starfinder Second Edition is going to have access to, similar to what the Dead Sons campaign was with the Incident Absalon Station. And one of the things I really like about it is there's a bunch of these call out boxes that they have in here. Let's see if I can find one right away. Yeah. Where they kind of explain different things about GMing. And so in here, I saw stuff about how influence works, how kind of just different things that a new GM, overcoming hazards in here, leveling up, talking about relaxed role play. So just a lot of GM tidbits that I think a really experienced GM might already have this stuff down. They'd understand that. But somebody who's like, wow, I'm really excited about this and I really want to run this, I don't have a lot of experience. These things I think are really helpful. So that's one of the things I really enjoyed. Covered a lot of aspects in there. A second thing I have in here, and it actually happens early on in the book. And first of all, I got to say to our audience, we're going to have some spoilers in here. So if you don't like spoilers, you probably shouldn't listen to this episode, but listen anyway.
Yeah, I think it's probably fair to say, you know, some people are like, oh, if you're listening to spoilers, then skip the next 3 minutes or something. No, I think... Yeah. You're done if you don't want spoilers.
Yeah, I mean, because there's going to be some spoilers in here. So early on, they have an assistant of sorts, Captain Concierge, who we've seen in some other things now. It's kind of the build-up to second edition and a lot of the publicity that Paizo was using had Captain Concierge in it. You have this virtual intelligence helps you learn how to do cinematic starship combat. So kind of takes you through a simulated environment to learn the different roles. And then right after that, you have a flight from Epsilon Station Oh, and then you have to get into Cinemax.
Oh no, something goes wrong. What a surprise.
Can you believe it? Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, it kind of has the phases of this, of this scene you're going to do and how to go through it. I think this is a wonderful way to introduce somebody into what Starship Combat is going to look like here. I mean, I remember, Ron, do you remember the very first Starship Combat that ever came out for Starfinder?
I wrote the very first Starship Combat that ever came out. The first two, because they were in the same original scenario. And that was, it was in the course of that, developing that, doing some playtesting of that, I'm like, hey, there isn't much for a Mystic with the skills the pre-gen Mystic has to even do in Starship Combat. I had one of my playtest players was playing the Mystic and was trying to kind of do everything he could to try to make himself useful, and actually ended up being very useful only because the rules are so new, nobody else really kind of got them. But the Mystic player, he kind of got, he knew, kind of knew, oh, this is what we're going to roll to do this in this order. I do remember those first two combats very well.
Yeah. And so I ran Into the Unknown, which was the first adventure written for Starfinder Society, I guess, or Starfinder, short adventure. Mm-hmm. I ran it like a dozen times at PAX here in Seattle. I don't know if it was PAX or PAX West at the time. PAX Prime or PAX West. I forget when they started making all the other ones. I think it was PAX West. And I tell you, it was a challenge for players to kind of learn and understand that. It wasn't a very easy way to learn things. And I really, no fault of yours, Ron. I'm sure it was all the developer's fault. whoever that was. But I really like, I kind of like this way of easing you into this sort of system. And I hope whenever they come up with the tactical Starship Combat, however that is, I imagine they'll probably have a similar way to walk people through that. So that's like a second thing I liked. And then kind of the third thing, and it's kind of a pair of things, there's a pretty extensive back matter for this adventure here. It's like a good 30 pages worth, which is pretty big, right? Or maybe even more. Yeah. It's pretty big. But two things they have in here are a playable ancestry for Nalibrium, which is what Zoe is, and then a versatile heritage for Corpse Folk, which is what Zoe is as well. And it's kind of neat that these are fully developed and available for players who want to do that sort of thing. So it's kind of a new thing. In the past, these had always kind of been NPCs that you engaged with, and you really didn't have a good sense for what were their abilities, what could they do, what were the benefits. You just kind of knew a little bit, oh, they're undead, and so they have this.
We had the Librian ancestry kind of like, you know, as one of those little sidebars. So you could play one, but right,
it wasn't near as detailed as this. Yeah.
No, obviously we'll go. Yeah. Because it was just a sidebar on a one basically page like monster, like, oh, the Librians, they're the people who lived on Eox before Eox got all messed up.
Before its atmosphere got sucked away and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And what was it? No, we never did Corpse. Yeah, Corpse Folk were always the bad.
Corpse Folk were monsters. Yeah, they were.
And then it was like the Borai came out in Pack Worlds, which is like, right. But that was sort of the. But now we have two, both of them, Borai Versal Heritage and Corpse Folk Versal Heritage. So it's like multiple ways to be undead or a type of undead. So
Borai is also a heritage, not a ancestry, right?
Yeah, it's a versatile heritage.
Yeah, so both.
So you can be a dwarf, Mora, you can be a
rat. Which means both of the undead things are, you layer on top of, what were you before you became undead?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of like the smart way to do it, because otherwise you have to kind of like think about like, well, what if I want to play an undead Sarsichian? No, that's not, is that a specific ancestry? No, you just layer on top. It's a lot of the ways, like the way Book of the Dead did skeleton is an ancestry, because it kind of doesn't matter what you were. You're just a bunch of bones. Right. Although there were some of them that had heritages that you'd be a compact skeleton or a taller one or a bigger one, right? But then all of the archetypes were becoming slowly turning into a ghoul or slowly turning into a ghost or a vampire or a zombie. was like, oh, you just be your character, a bunch of stuff happening to you, but also you're undead, you're becoming undead.
Yep.
Okay, cool. Well, Ron, what are some things that you enjoyed about Guilt of the Grave World?
Well, right from the very beginning, one of the things that really impressed me is how long the adventure toolbox at the back is. The introduction is really long. And the reason it is it's got a lot of like new backgrounds and things like that to allow your players to really plug into the story, recommendation on classes and things like that. It's a kind of thing that goes into like a PDF player's guide that we have. But I think that there is a real risk of getting an adventure path and not having access to a player's guide, right? What you're, you know, bringing over to your friend's house in order to sit around their dining room table and play the game or whatever. I think that there is having everything contained within one book, these pages, is actually really helpful. It certainly puts front and center to the GM, here are the backgrounds that your characters might be coming from. Look, here they are. They're right here. I've been guilty in the past of starting a campaign and telling people, yeah, there's probably a player's guide out there somewhere. Go make your characters based on that. And then not really
not even reading it yourself.
I mean, eventually I figure if the adventure wanted me to incorporate it, they would include it. Well, they do in here. It's incorporated in here. So I think that was really neat.
I think starting with Attack of the Swarm, we started putting players' guides in the first volume in the first volume of Adventure Path as a sort of like, hey, this is what a player's guide would be. So it was part of the writing of the book instead of it being an extra writing that we had to do on top of the schedule, right? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to have that happen. And we always would sort of take that chapter, take it out and slice it and just sort of pop it out as a PDF. So I don't know for sure. I need to double check this, but whether or not that chapter is actually available as a PDF as a player's guide.
Oh, instead of as a separate document, here's the player's guide stuff. That would be smart.
Right. Yeah. So they'd have to like make less stuff, but there's some stuff in that introduction that is a little spoilery. So they may have had to cut some things, but the introduction-y background stuff, you know, makes sense to have it as a separate thing.
Yeah, I like the scallywag background.
I do have, and then looking through some of the art strikes me. It's a combination of some of the art's a little bit silly and some of the art's a little bit scary. One of the things I thought was really intimidating was the old the laser wolves, Atashtari. I love these. And so as soon as I saw Atashtari, I was initially like, oh, yeah, I love those. And I'm like, wait a minute, aren't those really tough to come really this early in an adventure path? But they're juvenile Tashtari, so it's okay, everybody.
It's okay. So they're puppies, so it's okay to kill them.
That's right. But the other, speaking of art, the number three thing that I liked is actually at the end, Pact Port, the image of the city is an amazing piece of art. And I think that when you're putting like a city map together, you've got the option of having something that is like, oh, well, these buildings are this size and they're exactly this far apart. And location A is exactly, you know, so many blocks from location B and so on and things like that. Or you can decide, maybe get a little, you know, maybe kind of pretty it up a little bit. Maybe you've got 3D looking buildings or something like that. This just put the pedal to the metal. And it's like, we're going to make something that is a really exciting piece of art of the city first and foremost. And then, we'll make sure that the stuff that you see or places that you go are included in there. It really reminded me, for an entirely separate reasons, I've been looking at the Lost Omens Grand Bazaar. And it's got this huge, pretty spread in it of all the buildings that are in the Absalom Marketplace. And I even thought looking in Grand Bazaar, I'm like, this is really pretty with have these 3D buildings. Like, and I remember thinking, gosh, what if it was like even more leaned into the art? Well, now we've seen that. That's what that image is. And I really like that.
Cool. Excellent.
Cool. Yeah.
Is that three? That's. That's three. That's
big. Yeah, okay. He did three. So, speaking of art, I'll jump in here as the last bits and say, like, one of the things that sort of struck me right away as I opened the book up is the border, the page borders on here, right? And they are the, you know, they match the colors of the cover, and they're all sort of some things you'd expect: bones and sinew and flesh and spines and stuff like that. But there's also the flowers kind of blooming out of them. Red flowers, little like poppies almost, possibly. That's like intriguing to me. I was like, oh, now I really need to kind of dig into this and find out maybe find out why that's saying something about the adventure or something, you know, basically, right? Unfortunately, I didn't have time to like read through the entire book, so I don't know if that has anything to do with anything. But I did sort of flip around a bit and notice that in the back too, and not all that back matter. The other thing I like is that we get a backstory for Zoe. Zoe has always been sort of out there as a character. First and foremost, just so he's a game show host, and now he owns a whole media conglomerate. Like, who is he? Who was he? He's obviously, you know, undead and been alive for probably, you know, thousands of years or whatever. But so what's his deal? We learn a little bit about him. He's got a, I'm not going to say too much about that. I'm not going to spoil too much about it, but it's a slightly tragic backstory. Let's just say that. And then finally, oh, and I'm going to call this up because I'm going to have the difficulty pronouncing it. One of the monsters in here. There's a lot of fun monsters in here. You got a phantom dog, which is fun, and a some sort of mummy moth swarm. But
yeah,
the art I like, I think, I don't know, the most is the Reculobutopus, a manta ray situation. It looks like it's a burrowing manta ray. It's got like its back is kind of mossy, I guess, or furry. It's just gonna, and it's got a terrible mouth. It's just kind of like, oh, that's freaking weird. I love it. Yeah, it is. I thought it was one of those, like, one of the flying rays that maybe like the dust ray. The dust manta, there's, I think, more of a flying thing.
Yeah.
It probably burrows too. But this is just got, it's got a speed of 5 feet and a burrow speed of 25 feet. So once it's not burrowing, it's not getting very far. It's just kind of flopping around like a carpet on the ground. But it's still cool looking. I like it. Mouth, you know, again, some good looking art there.
Can I give two quick follow up on that? I was actually like really impressed with the dog creatures you said, the Geth.
Yeah,
the Phantom Geth.
Yeah, not from the art, but it strikes me when I saw that this was a Geth, their language matters, right? And dogs are so culturally important to people that they sort of earn an exceptionally short name for what they are. Mm. It's very simple. So something that is equally very important in a culture tends to have a really clipped short name. And so Geth communicates that it has the same kind of role as dog. Mm-hmm. Within that culture. I thought that was neat.
That's a good point, yeah.
I also don't know, if you're a Zoe fan, for those of you who are Zoe fans, the special edition cover, which is super shiny, has Zoe!
Wow.
That Zoe logo is in the regular one, too, just sort of, but not as obviously not as shiny, because it's like on the title page. Well, yeah, that's a fun logo.
Well, if we're going to talk about art, then one of the things I really liked is the bone flayer, which is some sort of bony creature with a roto laser for a mouth.
Why not?
Or looks like a construct, bony construct. Anyway, so for honorable mention, so I have one. I don't know if you guys have any, but and this is, I mentioned throwbacks early on, and I don't know if this is a true throwback or not, but I really like that one of the adventures here is a cooking competition. I don't know if you all know, but Jenny Jarzabski wrote Pack World Warriors, which is one of the funnest Starfinder Society adventures out there. It was another Zoe competition. And one of the really fun things in there was a cooking competition as one of the small sections. Now we have a big, full-blown cooking competition. So I thought that was really cool. I thought that's kind of a neat callback to something that was a lot of fun to do before. Fleshing it out more.
Yeah. Honorable mention for me is that it starts with a bunch of dwarves. Go dwarves.
Yeah.
Yep. And I have another honorable mention that's related to Jason, not me, with the special edition, which I haven't unwrapped, which is why it's reflective. People have seen the cover, and the cover looks really cool. Have you seen the back where it's the Paizo Golem saying, Zoe?
Oh, no.
That's not on the regular one. It's just on the special edition. The Paizo Golem going, Zoe!
Oh, you know what's...
It only has only just occurred. I'm gonna just sort of lay my ignorance out to bear. It has only just occurred to me that Zoe is short for Paizo in a lot of ways. Like, that they have this... That Paizo contains Zoe. I didn't think about that. I didn't think about it. I assume that's why he's called Zoe now, that because someone decided to come up with a silly name and shorten the word Paizo.
You know what we lost by going
to
these...
I don't know what's wrong with me.
Going to these single book APs.
What's that?
What we lost is on the back of the AP would be like the one liner about the next coming AP, which would have a kind of a really cool saying about it. Do you remember these?
What,
Jason?
No. What are you talking about?
I need to go get one then.
Starfinder?
The quotes by the copyright?
No, it's not a quote by the... I don't think it's that.
Like the coming soon page?
Yeah, it's like a coming soon that would talk about the next AP.
Okay.
But like there was one of them that was like they were there were names of like 80 sitcoms were being used for the coming to describe the coming.
Oh no, that was me. That wasn't like Nick. That wasn't what's described as coming. That was just the back. The little plug on the back that, you know, right, would say, tell your story in space. Da, da, da.
Yeah,
like, that wasn't about the next one. That was about that one.
Oh, okay.
That was always about that
plug
one.
On the back.
The current volume, yes.
Yeah.
It was the Horizons of the Vast. For some reason, I started just throwing in, like, it was Family Matters and whatever. Like,
I thought
I
that was really cool.
I just wanted to see if anyone noticed.
Yeah, I thought it was
John
really
apparently
neat.
Did.
John and here it says, discover the secrets beyond the grave. Okay, that's kind of boring. No Easter egg.
Oh, you know
it's
what?
It's got to be, you know.
I realize, you know what this does not have at the very end? Ads.
It doesn't have the...
There's no ad page in this one.
Oh,
how did they get away with that? I remember being told from my earliest days at Paizo to be sure to reserve the ad pages at the back of Adventure Path volumes.
Yeah. But it is produced using ecologically sourced paper and soy ink.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and there's a quote here.
That's weird. There's a quote from the... It's from the thing. Usually what we put to some sort of random like quote up from a literature or a movie. This is a quote like by an NPC in this adventure.
Oh, I've done like song lyrics, Simpsons
song
quote.
Lyrics. Yeah. We don't source them either. We just kind of throw them out there.
Yep.
All right. Well, anyway.
And it's...
That's some cool stuff. Again, it's not an exhaustive review of the book, just kind of a quick first look for those who are thinking about getting it. I think it's definitely a worthwhile get to run if you're starting out in second edition, want a long-form adventure. But obviously, there's going to be more coming down the road.
Well, what do you guys say? Would you play it or run it?
I haven't read enough of it to know if I would run it. To
I'd
be
run
honest,
it looks pretty straightforward to run. So
yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
but I'd play. Why not play it? Why not? Sure, always.
Yeah, I think I would as well.
Well, we might.
So that's a success. That's a success right there, right? If the three of us are like, I would use this as a player or a GM, then that's a success.
Certainly. All right. Well, until next time, I'm John.
And I'm Ron.
And I'm Jason. And this has been Digital Divination.